Please honor your commitment, but don't make the commitment if you don't think you're going to honor it. So last Thursday, I presented Master Ginman's koan, and I'll read it again in order to get us started. The main subject. Master Yunlin said to the assembled monks, "Between heaven and earth, within the universe, there is one." Oh, it's the wrong one, but that's a good one too. Master Yunlin spoke to his assembly and said, "Everyone has their own light. If you try to see it, everything is in darkness. What is everyone's light?" Later, in place of his disciples, he said, "The halls and the gate." Temple storeroom, temple gate. And again, he said, "It may be better to say nothing than to say something good." Or, "It may be better to say something, not to say something, even if it's a good word," or something like that. So, various translations. So, Master Ponglin's question is, what is everybody's light? So, Dogen, Master Dogen, was inspired by this koan, and he wrote a fascicle called Komyo, which is variously translated as divine light, radiant light, brightness, the translator here uses the term divine light and Nishiyama and Nishijima. Nishiyama. Yeah. Nishiyama, I get them mixed up. Each one of them wrote a translation. I think this is Nishiyama. So, and Nishijima calls it brightness. Other people call it radiant. I think clearly translates it as radiant. I like this translation because it's fairly simple and maybe not as accurate, technically, but he calls it divine light, which I like. And as I talked about last time, divine, of course, presupposes a divinity. I like the use of it as the essence. It refers to the essence, whatever that is. If you want to think of it as a divinity, you're welcome. You can think of it any way you want, but in a sense, it's better not to try to pin it down. I think, like, you know what it is. Already, we know what it is. But when we try to, as Master Yunlin says, you already know what it is, but when you try to define it or pin it down, it eludes you. dim and dark. But darkness is also the light. So this koan may not be as simple as it looks. It's dim and dark. When you try to see the light, it's dim and dark. So as I talked about last time, so Vairochana, of course, in the Buddhist pantheon, Vairochana is at the center of the mandala. And everything radiates from Vairochana. I like to think of Vairochana sitting in the center of the universe, radiating light, and not needing to do anything else. So as I said before, like in esoteric Buddhism, Vairochana plays a very central role as the primal Buddha, manifestation of the primal Buddha. And the Zen teachers often refer to Vairochana when they want to make this point. Dogen talks about Vairochana in many of his fascicles. Sitting in the plucking out the eye of Vairochana and sitting there means enlightenment. Great enlightenment means plucking out the eye of Vairochana and sitting there. In the Dharma transmission ceremony, there is a time when the person who is the teacher says, "I am now Vairochana Buddha, sitting on the lotus throne of 1,000 petals." So this is actually a part of Soto Zen transmission. Keizan Zenji, who was the third or fourth ancestor of Soto Zen, who actually developed the school after Dogen, wrote a book, The Transmission of Light, which is a characterization, a mythical characterization of most of the Indian ancestors and the Chinese ancestors and the Japanese ancestors. It would be interesting to study that. He makes each one of those short biographies a koan. Of course, Dogen was inspired by Yunmen's koan. And so he wrote this komyo. Komyo means divine light or radiant light. It also means can mean glorious light. That's one of the meanings of that character. So this is rather small print, so I have to lean forward. So in his opening statement, Dogen says, "Great Master Chosa Shoken in Konan of the Sung Dynasty once told his followers, 'The entire world is reflected in the eye of a monk. The entire world is contained in everyday conversation. The entire world is throughout your body. The entire world is your own divine light. The entire world is within your divine light, and the entire world is inseparable from yourself.'" So that's Dogen's opening statement, and the rest is commentary. I'll read that again. Doesn't seem to have, nobody seems to know his exact dates. Sometimes Dogen will quote from some obscure Zen master to get his point. So, great master Chosa Shoken in Konan, this is a Japanese name, of the Sung dynasty, once told his followers, "The entire world is reflected in the eye of a monk." There's a, I don't know if this is the same story, but it's someone once said, the entire world is reflected in the eye of a monk. The entire world is the eye of a monk. Where will you defecate? That's cool. The entire world is the eye of a monk. Where will you be? Far gone. We're going to have to answer that question. But it brings up a lot of things for us. The entire world is contained in everyday conversation. So that's another koan. The entire world is contained in everyday conversation. The entire world is throughout your body. The entire world is your own divine life. The entire world is within you, your divine light, and the entire world is inseparable from yourself. Akatagiri Roshi one time was talking about, I don't remember, he was giving some kind of talk, and he was talking about birth and death, I think, Shoji, and he said, the Bodhisattva's halo is the entire universe. And I think this is, close to what Dogen is talking about, that the entire world is yourself, the entire universe is yourself, the entire world is Vairochana's light, the entire world is your light, and you are, your light is your light. Andrea loaned me a book called And Then There Was Light. I don't know if some of you may have read that book. It's a book of about, I'm trying to remember his name, but yeah, but when he was a Frenchman who was the leader of the resistance in France during the Second World War, when he was 8, he became blind. And when he became blind, at first, you know, it was like he couldn't see. But he talks about how he was filled with light. When he became blind, he became filled with light. And he describes in pretty much exactly the same way, I can't believe it, that his experience is just like this. And he talks about it so eloquently and matter-of-factly, it's very compelling. So at some point, I'll read you some passages from that book, because he just keeps going on, and it keeps unfolding the Dharma. Pretty amazing. So then Dogen goes on and he says, everyone who is seeking the Buddha way should study the teaching diligently. This teaching diligently never becomes slack. If they do, there will be very few Zen students with the divine light of enlightenment. So, Dogen equates this divine light with enlightenment. Enlightenment is light. and to be able to open up to this, to our original light, of course, is to express the Dharma, the true Dharma. Chinese emperor Komyo means divine light, but there was an emperor named that. Chinese emperor Komyo of Gokan was the fourth child of Emperor Kobu. You have to kind of bear with me because you're giving this kind of lineage of emperors and their children. Chinese Emperor Komyo of Gokan was the fourth child of Emperor Kobu, and his era was called the 10th Heihei, AD 51. Now it's interesting that Dogen named his temple Heihei, which is something like heavenly peace. During the reign, his reign, Buddhism was first transmitted to China by Matogya and Jiko Horan. This emperor held many discussions with the Taoists, often sitting in front of a table stacked with a huge amount of Indian scriptures, and finally converted them by his superior arguments. Just a little story that takes this a little further. In those days, they had fires. They would, in the courtyard, they would have a fire burning here and a fire burning there in an urn. And when there was a dispute as to whose scriptures were the true scriptures, they would put one scripture in one fire and the other scripture in the other fire. And the one that didn't burn was the true scripture. You should always write your scriptures in stone. But I don't know, so apparently the Buddhist scriptures didn't burn. Of course, this is a fairy tale. But this is mythology. So later on, in the reign of Mute, during the Futsu era, the first Chinese patriarch, Bodhidharma, came alone from India to Koshu in the southern part of China. That was in 520. He was the 28th Dharma era of Shakyamuni and brought the right transmission of Buddha's law. He stayed at Shōshitsuho Shōrinji Monastery on Mount Suzan. Later on, he transmitted the Dharma to the second ancestor, Taisho Eka. So Bodhidharma comes to China and transmits the Dharma to Eka. The divine light of Buddha's teaching has been handed down continuously by each successive ancestor. Before Bodhidharma's time, the divine light of Buddha was not seen or heard in China. No one was able to perceive his own divine light. Even though everyone inherently possesses divine light, no one can discover it by only using their own judgments. Therefore, no one in China was able to clarify the form and original nature of divine light or experience its virtues until Bodhidharma. They did not understand that divine light is their very essence. They thought that the divine light is completely separate from themselves. Their mind was clouded by this false idea of separation, and they could not perceive that everything is divine light. So, what Dogen, I believe, is talking about is that before Bodhidharma, although Buddhism had entered into China for actually just almost five centuries by the time Bodhidharma came, Bodhidharma was the ancestor who brought the Dharma that really awakened, that brought the practice that really awakened the true Dharma in people. Before that, it was mostly scholarly and people searching for it. So what he's alluding to really is that Bodhidharma brought the Zazen to China. And Zazen was the vehicle for expressing, allowing divine light to be expressed. That's the Zen story. So, people who think that they are separate from divine light also believe that divine light is red, white, blue, or yellow. Similar to the light from a fire, or the reflected light of water, or the sparkle of gems or jewels, or the light of a dragon, or like sun and moonlight. So, he's saying people who don't realize think that it's something outside of themselves. Like a deity. Sometimes people think of deity as something outside of themselves. So, I think that one of the reasons why, and Ellen kind of reminded me of this, why do you like the term divine instead of something else? And then he said that because it's your inner life, it's your own divinity. And I agree with that, but that's why I like it. It's not from someplace else. It's not, the source is not someplace else. So, it's not like any particular color or some kind of, like the light of a firefly or, you know, some light, something that is outside of yourself. Sometimes a spiritualist sees certain kinds of lights, a blue light or this kind of light or that kind of light, and I kind of focus on that as something to as something spiritual. Of course, red light, blue light, whatever, is an aspect of divine light, but it's not the source itself. So do not study under masters who teach only letters. Many teachers are like Shisha, who taught that divine light is like the light of a firefly and did not emphasize that divine light should be studied through enlightenment. From the Han, Sui, Tang, and Song dynasties to the present time, most people have thought like this. Even though you may study under a master with a famous name, you should not accept any distorted explanations. The divine light of Buddha fills the entire universe. Everything is Buddha. Everything is the patriarchs. This is the transmission from Buddha to Buddha. The Buddhas and patriarchs constitute divine light. Through the practice and enlightenment of divine light, we can become a Buddha and do Zazen as he did. Then we will be able to discover the actualization of enlightenment. There is a koan. Divine light illuminates the eastern world of 18,000 Buddhas. Here, east means the center of the universe, that is, ourselves. It does not mean direction, as most people think. Dogen uses this term, east, several times. And, it doesn't mean a direction as opposed to west, or north or south. It's like the center of the universe, wherever that is, which is everywhere. There is an east in this world, in other worlds, even an east in east. 18,000 means that which in ourselves is beyond number. In other words, unlimited mind. It is not the 18,000 of mathematics. It has nothing to do with numbers like 20,000 or 80,000. The world of Buddhas means the land of enlightenment. It is within ourselves. There is no light beam that travels to the eastern world. So, you know, in the Platform Sutra, the Sixth Ancestor talks about pure land. And I think Dogen is talking about this. There's no light beam that goes to the east 20,000 leagues away. Everything is right here. So when any Zen teacher talks about in this way, he's talking about this is right here. Everything is right here in you. 18,000 Buddhas are right here in you, within you. So manifesting this light is your essence, our essence. And it's the same essence in everyone. This is how we're all connected. You know, each one of us is a different manifestation. So the word, he says, the world of Buddha means the land of enlightenment. It is within ourselves, and there is no light beam that travels to the eastern world. In other words, it's not separate from ourselves. If you comprehend the entire world is the east itself, the east itself is the entire world. You will have some idea how to understand the world. It is nothing but the divine light of Buddha. The 10 quarters of the world are the same as the Buddha land of 18,000. So, I just wonder if you have any questions you want to discuss so far.
Charlie. So, Jim, it's almost mind-blowing to think that this word east that we identify with a direction of the compass
mm-hmm.
in this context, in the context of China long ago, and maybe even China right now, because as I recall, in the Mao era, the national anthem was called "The East is Red,"
mm-hmm.
and I think they're using the East the same way as they're using it long ago.
Could be.
I mean, it's just.
Well, I don't know if
so
they.
So distant from our understanding.
I don't know if they used it long ago, but I think Dogen used it.
Oh, okay. Oh, well then, yes, that's another layer that we're a little bit more familiar
with. Yeah, this is the
Doganization. Yeah, okay. Well,
thank you.
You're welcome. I'll be more forgiving. But
yeah, he's also criticizing the people who think that the pure land in the West is, 18,000. He calls it the East.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting that he calls it the East.
The East.
The Pure Land people call it the West.
And you're all the same.
Yes, but they're in the same place. So then he introduces a new theme, not a new theme, but a new slant. He says, Emperor Kinshu of the Tang Dynasty was the father of two future emperors. He goes through this again. Bokushu and Senshu, and the grandfather of the future emperors, Keishu, Bunshu, and Bushu. Once after he had finished building a pagoda in his palace, he had a dedication service performed. Now this is the story. He's going to use this as the story. He finished his palace, and he's going to have a dedication for the palace. So during the evening ceremony, he suddenly saw a brilliant light shining in the hall. He was overjoyed at the vision. And early next morning, he told his high officials about it. They all thought it was a sign of a prosperous reign and congratulated him. An omen. They said it occurred because of the emperor's virtue and noble spirit. However, there was one official, Yubuko of Khans, and disciples who studied the Buddhist way, who did not congratulate the emperor. The emperor asked him, "All the officials except you gave me some congratulations. What's the meaning? What's the reason for this?" Yubuko replied, "Once I read in the sutras that the light of Buddha was not red, blue, yellow, white, or any natural color. The light you saw was not the light of the Buddha. It was only the light of the dragon which protects you." Then the emperor asked him, "Well, what is the light of the Buddha?" And Yubuko remained silent. You have to remember, Dogen wrote this in the 13th century, and we're getting some taste of that ancient time. So although Yubunko was a layperson, he had the right-minded attitude for practice. We can imagine that he was a person of great power. Following his example, we should study the Buddhist way. If you do not study like this, your study will be in vain. Even though Emperor Bute explained the Hokohanya Sutra and was able to call down flowers from heaven, he did not have a proper mind for study, and his efforts were useless. When 10 stages and 3 wise people make Yubunko's understanding their own, the real nature of resolve, practice, and enlightenment manifests itself for the first time. So, resolve, practice, and enlightenment are 3 aspects of Dogen's Dharma. These are the 3 important aspects. I think that what he means by 10 sages and 3 wise people, those are the emperor's retainers. However, Yubunko did not have a complete understanding of the sutras. He said that the divine light of Buddha was not blue, yellow, red, or white. What did he mean by that? It is not a natural light, of course, but what is it? Emperor Kenshu, if he had been like a real Buddha, an ancestor would have insisted that Yubunko answer his question. So Dogen said he should have, when Yubunko said, "I don't know," he should have said, "Well, what do you mean? How come you're saying this?" And kind of gotten into something with him. But he apparently he didn't.
So he kept his head.
He wanted to keep his head. Yeah, I think that that's a good answer. I agree with you. So then Dogen talks about it himself. He says, "Divine light is found even in countless grasses. It is found everywhere. The harmonization of all the different functions of a plant, roots, stalk, branches, leaves, flowers, fruit, color, are expressed as divine light. Not only this world, but also in the other worlds of celestial beings, human beings, hell, demons, animals, and asuras, can divine light be seen. If we understand," those are the 6 worlds, right? The circle of transmigration. Study Chosha's, let's see. If we can understand not only other world, human beings, hells, demons, animals, and asuras, can divine light be seen. If we understand divine light, then mountains, rivers, and land are secondary. That is, divine light is the most important thing. Study Chosha's saying in the sense that the entire world is suffused with our own divine light. The changing, I think he means the transformation of life and death is the transformation are the transformations of divine light. the change from ordinary person to saint is like the changing of, or the transformation of different colors in divine light. To become a Buddha or ancestor is like the colors of black and yellow. Practice and enlightenment are one form of divine light. Grasses, trees, a mud fence, skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are colors of divine light. Smoke, mist, water, stone, sky, flying birds, the way of enlightenment, all these are the changing form of divine light. To understand our divine light is to meet and experience the real Buddha. The entire world is ourselves. We ourselves are the entire world. You cannot escape from this fact. Even if there's a day set aside for people to say we are the world. Remember that?
Yeah.
And when they sang that, I thought, gee, sounds just like Dogen. We cannot escape from this fact. Even if there is a place to escape, it can only be enlightenment. Our body is in the form of the entire world. Indeed, the way of enlightenment and practice of Buddhism can only be grasped by the realization that our skin, flesh, bones, and marrow contain the entire world. Great Master Daijun Kyoshin about Yunmen, that's Uban, from whom this koan comes, was the 39th ancestor from Buddha. He received the Buddhist way from Great Master Seppo Shingaku. Although he began to study Buddhism when already quite old, he studied earnestly, and we can see that he was truly one of the great men of Buddhism. He was the one who transmitted the Mount Uban school of teaching and was a shining example of their doctrine. Such an ancestor has never been seen before or since. So one day at the Dharma Hall, he asked the monks, "Divine light shines in everyone, but if we try to look for it, we can't find it. Where is everyone's divine light?" No one answered. That's koan, right? Then Uban said, "In the monastery, in the Buddha Hall, in the administration building, and in the main gate." Uban did not mean that divine light will come in the future, or was in the past, or can be produced by others. He meant that we ourselves possess divine light. Uman taught that the entire world is Uman. Uman did not explain divine light. Rather, each one's divine light explains itself. Divine light shines in everyone. The entire body of a person is divine light. Divine light means people. Divine light is both inside and outside of human beings. Divine light is people. People are people. Divine light is divine light. Being is being. We can see now that divine light possesses everyone. Everyone possesses divine light within themselves. Everything about divine light is everything about ourselves. What did Uman mean by people and divine light? He asked, "Where is the divine light?" This question surpasses any questions about divine light. He meant that people and divine light are inseparable. They form one body. The monks did not answer, but sometimes no answer is the correct answer. No answer is the eye and treasury of the true law and the serene mind of nirvana transmitted from the correct teaching of Buddha. Uman answered his own question. In the monastery, in the Buddha hall, in the administration building, and in the main gates. Why did he answer like this? What he meant by these was very different from what monks and lay people think about them. Did he mean himself, or the six Buddhas who preceded Shakyamuni, or the 28 Indian ancestors, or the six Chinese ancestors, or all the Zen masters of all ages and countries? Whatever he meant, it is nothing other than divine light. His expression not only means people, but also divine light. After Uman's explanation of divine light, many different teachings arose, like no Buddha in the Buddha hall. No Buddha hall, no Buddha. There is Buddha in divine light. Buddha does not have divine light. Divine light surpasses Buddha. Buddha is divine light, and so on and so on. And then he says, great master Shingaku of Mount Seppo. Seppo was there's a great koan with Seppo and Ganto, once told his monks, I met you in front of the monastery. This was an expression of his enlightenment and the true expression of himself. He wanted to teach the monks the real meaning of the word monastery. Once Seppo's disciple, Hofuku, asked Gakko, another disciple, our master insists on only using the expression, I met you in front of the monastery, to explain his teaching, but never mentions Boshute or Usuke, Usekere. These are place names. He just talks about the monastery. He doesn't say here or there or some other place. So we have to understand what he means by monastery. Then Gakko quickly returned to the master's quarters and Hofuku to the monastery. They understood the meaning and purpose of their master's teaching. By returning to their respective dwellings, they showed that enlightenment is to meet our real selves. This is the real meaning of meeting in front of the monastery. Similarly, great master Shinno of Jizo-in said, the monk in charge of the kitchen enters the kitchen. This surpasses the meaning of time.
Speaking of which.
Again, I was just thinking of it.
It's 8:05. It's not a great choice.
Yeah, I understand. The monk in charge of the kitchen enters the kitchen. Please take a break, but don't talk. So I would like to open it up if you have.
Mike. It's caught in your clothes between your Karama and your Jubla.
The little thing. I would like to open up if we want to have a discussion. Do you have any question or doubt or no doubt? Well, usually, when you read the literature, you realize that most of the teachers, the ancestors, are talking about covering. The moon is always there. The moon, of course, is a reflection of the sun. You can't look directly at the sun, but you can look at the moon. And the light of the moon is cool. The light of the sun is pretty hot. So enlightenment is usually characterized as moonlight. And all throughout the literature, moonlight is used as an expression of enlightenment. For enlightenment, Dogen says, the moon reflected in the water is reflected in the water, but the water is not disturbed. It's also sometimes described as the reflection of the water of the waves, the glee, which is an Irish word meaning dancing, dancing light, which means that although light is everywhere, its expression is different. Endless forms of expression. Endless forms of expression. So when our light is covered, we feel desperate and sad and unhappy. And when our light is uncovered, we feel happy and joyful and alive, and we really experience ourselves. Zen Master Hongzhi in China, from time to time I've given talks on his practice instructions. Hongzhi lived just before, about 100 years before Dogen, and he taught at the same monastery where Dogen received his transmission from Rujing. And he was considered a really high ancestor. When we went to China, we went to the monastery, and there was a stone stela of his. I don't remember whether it had his portrait or not, but it had his dedication and his teaching, and had been cracked in half by the communists. You know, they completely destroyed these temples. And they were rebuilt, most of them, although I think that one was, wasn't destroyed, but a lot of the stuff inside of it was destroyed. But he was the ancestor who kind of formalized what he called silent illumination. The practice of silent illumination, which is what we call Zazen and Shikantaza. Dogen was extremely fond of Hongzhi, and I think he was really influenced because he never met Hongzhi, of course. You can't say that he was his teacher, but Dogen kind of inherited the silent illumination teaching from Hongzhi, and probably through Rujing. And developed his own Shikantaza from Hongzhi's silent illumination Zen, which emphasizes Zazen. Hongzhi is one of those people who really transmitted the teaching of illumination, and which continues to be developed in Soto Zen. So I'm going to read you a little bit of Hongzhi's teachings. He says, this is called, well, I think the translators Kaigen and Chinese person translated this Cultivating the Empty Field, this book they call it Cultivating the Empty Field. And the name of this, I don't know whether, I think some of these they gave titles to and some of them already had titles. This is called The Ancient Ferry Boat in Bright Moonlight. A patch-robed monk's authentic task is to practice the essence in each moment, in each minute event, carefully discerning the shining source, radiant without discrimination, one color unstained. You must keep turning inward, then the source is apprehended. This is called being able to continue the family business. Do not wear the changing fashions. Transcend the duality of light and shadow. Accordingly, the ancestor's single trail is marvelously embodied. The residual debris of the world departs. Its influence ended. This worldly knowledge does not compare to returning to the primary and obtaining confirmation. Observing beyond your skull, the core finally can be fulfilled and you can emerge from the transitory. The reeds blossom under the bright moon. The ancient ferry boat begins its passage. The jade thread fits into the golden needle. Then the opportunity arises to turn around, enter the world, and respond to conditions. All the dusts are entirely yours. All the dharmas are not someone else's. Follow the current and paddle along, naturally unobstructed. So, very interesting, wonderful poetics. Talking about how to find yourself and then how to return. He says, you know, to retreat from the dust, but then to return to the dust. So, your true practice is within the dust of the world. But in this poetics, he says, The reeds blossom under the bright moon. The ancient ferry boat begins its passage. The jade thread fits into the golden needle. What do you think about all that?
What you were saying about covering and uncovering, I'm just wondering about that with this going back into the dust of the world. I hear what you're saying about covering and uncovering, but I'm also wondering if when we're in agitation, like the moon reflected in the water that is disturbed, so you don't see a hole, but it's shattered and fragmented and we're caught up, isn't it that all still the light?
Right. It's like I'm trying to construct this story. A student asked Master Gensha about what do you do with a bright mirror? And Genja said, you smash it into 1,000 pieces. So, you know, bright mirror reflects, this is like, the enlightenment is the bright mirror, because the bright mirror is reflects everything exactly as it is, without distortion, without
desire.
Without desire, without self-interest, without, but simply as it is, right? Which is almost never seen. We almost never see that way. But this is ultimate seeing. It's like the bright mirror. So it's like returning to the absolute, right? And selflessness. So, but you can't stay there. So you have to smash the mirror, and the mirror falls into a thousand pieces, but each piece reflects the whole universe. Which means not hanging on to your enlightenment, but simply every movement of the every activity that you engage in is reflected in the light, is a reflection of the light. So
But that's different than the cover you were talking
about. It's different than the cover, yes. The covering is, you know, it's interesting. This blind man that I was talking about, you know, he said that he was just basking in this, because he was blind, he was just basking in the light, you know, he's in total joy. He said, but when I brought up a selfish thought or an angry thought, then it all disappeared. And as soon as I let go of my angry thought, let go of my critical thought, or my, you know, anything that covers like that, then it was always there. So it taught me not to. It taught me how to regulate my life so that I wouldn't be covering it over by greed, ill will, and delusion, actually. So this is why we say nirvana is the absence of greed, ill will, and delusion.
I think that there's a place that one tends to go from your last statement that is exactly it's hazardous. Mm-hmm. Which is why the response, Ginsha's response about the bright mirror is dispassion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the critique of Hongxue. Critique of Hongxue in the silent illumination school was basically it's kind of just sitting there and glowing. Is, you know, that's a critique from another angle of Zen. But when you listen to actually the words that you just read, jade thread and golden needle, the fairy crossing, I forget what those, but every one of these is actually, the illumination is manifested in the context of action. And not in the context of this kind of lumpish passivity where you just sit there glowing.
Well, yes, so you can't sit in Zazen all the time. You have to do something.
But even when you're sitting in Zazen, there's activity.
Yes, of course. This is why, you know, in Zazen, if you're simply sitting for your own enlightenment, that's selfish practice. This is why we encourage everyone to sit together. So that you're sharing yourself with everyone and encouraging other people and not just simply interested in your own realization. Matter of fact, you give up your comfort in order to help other people or to assist others. This is what it means by they're talking about all the time, both Dogen and all these ancestors, is Jijin Samai. Because Jijin Samai, Samadhi, is the Samadhi of the Self, which is what we receive in Zazen. But Tadjuyu Samadhi is the Samadhi that we what we give to others out of that self-realization.
But that isn't one of the translations from Jijiyu Samai self-actualizing Samadhi?
Yeah, self-actualizing Samadhi.
So that's what I'm saying, it's actualizing it's the activity, the constant activity of that.
But the other is Jijiyu and Tajiyu.
Ta is other.
So it's how we extend ourselves to encourage the samadhi of others, to kind of coax that out of other people, so to speak. Like when you ring the bell, you coax the samadhi out of the bell.
Or you also evoke it in other people. You bring it up in other people.
You're doing
when you sit with people or you interact or you just
well, of course, yes.
Transmit some of your own experience and it arises from your own nature.
Right. And just the act of doing Zazen together has far-reaching activity which we would never know about. There's another poem by Hongzhir, which is very close to this, only shorter, which I've always just felt this wonderful affinity with this poem. It says, when by the side of the ancient fairy, the breeze and moonlight are pure and clear, the dark vessel turns into a glowing world. That's like, to me, that's what Zazen is. Even though you can't say what Zazen is. So he uses this image of ancient fairy, the ancient fairy. It's like the fairy that goes from this shore to that shore, but there's no movement. Because this shore is that shore. There's no going someplace, but it's a... wonderful. The ancient fairy, it's like, you know, it's about your ancient self. When we think about our ancient self, you know, it's like some ancient feeling that we have, even though we may not know what that is, but it's a feeling. I don't know if you felt that, but I remember years ago we used to talk about old souls and new souls. And old souls were people who kind of got that, and new souls were people who didn't quite get that. So I'll read this again because it's very interesting. A path-robed monk's authentic task is to practice the essence in each minute event, carefully discerning the shining source, radiant without discrimination, one color unstained. So this is the monk's, this is what their life is about. That's their career. He said, what is the career of a monk? A monk have a career like a banker or something like that? How can one have a career? Well, the career is like to do this. That's what they're supposed to be doing. Devoted to simply practicing the essence in each minute event, carefully discerning the shining source. Radiant without discrimination, one color unstained. Well, so it's one color. It's like it's just one color. One color means no color, no particular color. But every color is the right color. You must keep turning inward, then the source is apprehended. And this is called being able to continue the family business. It's not the family business of the monk. Do not wear the changing fashions, transcend the duality of light and shadow. Accordingly, transcend the duality of light and shadow. That kind of means day and night, or dark and light. The darkness and light. Don't get caught by darkness or light in a dualistic sense. Because as in the Sandokai, you know, dark and light are like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. We walk into the dark and then we walk into the light. We walk into the dark, we walk into the light. Like this. And when we look at the moon, and when it's a full moon, we say we see the whole moon, but actually we only see half the moon. Yeah, but we take for granted that there's another side. The other side is dark. So one side is dark, the other side is light. One side is light, the other side is dark. But it's just one moon. And it's neither dark or light. And it's both dark and light. And the dark is dark, and the light is light. But it's just one moon. Ross?
Can you say something about when we ultimately come to practice, we're burdened and we're kind of heavy and dark with lots of things, and then as we sit, we kind of lighten up metaphorically and literally. And then Dogen's instruction to turn the light inward sounds like using an outside light to look inward, and then how we illumine outward and become transparent in our practice and kind of lighten up further. And then our practice transforms.
You know, what about that?
Well, it's like he's saying, turn the light inward.
Oh, turn the light inward.
And then, you know, we, as we practice, we become lighter in different ways. And then this divine light is actually coming from within out as we become more transparent. And so how do we practice with, for instance, having lots of things in the world to juggle, becoming filled up with that, and then our light gets kind of dark and diminished, and then we have to open up and have space between the activities so the light illumines ourselves and things.
Well, this is, of course, the koan of
our life.
Daily practice, right? So, Kenjo Koan is called koan of daily practice. How you extend your life into, or your practice into your daily life after zazen. That's Kenjo Koan. So, when you sit zazen, you let go of everything. And when you get off the cushion and enter the world, you take on the world, so to speak. That's called smashing the glass, smashing the mirror. Because you see the light in everything you encounter. And if you can see the light in everything you encounter, that's turning the light inward, because there is no inner or outer. Inward or outward. So what you see that looks like it's outside is actually not outside. It's your true body. But we focus on this person, and rightly so. This is one thing that we, you know, one part of our ourself that we can deal with. It's harder to deal with the rest of ourself, which is called the world. But if we see the world as ourself, it's easier. Then we, what is our attitude to ourself? Our attitude to ourself is the same as our attitude toward the world. And the way our attitude toward the world is the same as our attitude toward ourself. So when you see how we work in the world, then we can, it helps us to see how we work with ourselves. when, you know, because we are a mirror. We reflect, the eye of a monk is a mirror. The eye of a lay person is a mirror. So everything is reflected both ways. So the way people respond to us is a reflection of ourself. And we can see who we are by the way people respond to us. Not entirely, but...
So it says that's turning the light inward. When we can sit still enough to see other people's response to our actions, for instance, then that's turning this light inward to ourselves to illuminate ourselves to see the reflection of self and other, in other and self.
Yeah, but also turning the light inward is also simply examining yourself, right? I think, simply put, it's examining yourself.
Yeah, to study the self, to forget the self, but I was trying to see where the light figures in for the particular term in our context for the class. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a big subject.
Lifetime.
So it says, accordingly, the ancestor's single trail is marvelously embodied. Single trail means just going one way. Suyurus used to say that the Bodhisattva's way is like a single track. An endless track, just an endless regular track, or something like that, just going forever. Just one way, one road. Also, he says, like a big noodle, an endless noodle.
Cold or raw?
No, no.
Who said that?
The Buddha. The sort of then noodle. according to the ancestor's single trail, the ancestor's single trail is marvelously embodied. The residual debris of the world departs. Its influence ended. In other words, don't get caught by anything. Don't get caught by the debris of the world as something valuable. To be in the world, but to not be a victim of the world or enslaved by your senses. In the 90s, democracy was overtaken by conspicuous consumption. There's another word for it. It's called the market. The market superseded democracy. Democracy was no longer the rule of the land. The market became the rule of the land.
Capitalism.
The market. Not just capital. The market. That's why. And it's simply everyone for himself. That became the... And that's why we're in the mess we're in now. And that's kind of what his ancestors are warning us against, to not get caught up in the market. And they use the term marketplace. To be in the marketplace, but not to be caught by it. Or not to, because people are really hurt. But it supersedes democracy.
It supersedes religion.
It is religion. It becomes a religion, yeah. Because the market is supposed to regulate itself. And that's what's supposed to be the new paradigm. fill up, you know, the, anyway, I don't want to get into politics, but just as it's reflected here, the residual debris of the world departs. That's what we got, a lot of residual debris. Its influence ended. This worldly knowledge does not compare to returning to the primary and obtaining confirmation. Observing beyond your skull, the core finally can be fulfilled. In other words, yeah, to go beyond the limitations of your intellect. The core finally can be fulfilled, and you can emerge from the transitory. In other words, of course, this is the essence of Buddha Dharma, is how you are free from the transitory, even though everything changes. The reed blossoms under the bright moon. The ancient ferry boat begins its passage. The jade thread fits into the golden needle. Then the opportunity arises to turn around, enter the world, and respond to conditions. So the jade thread turns into the golden needle. It's like, I don't know how to describe that, but he follows that with, it's like something turns. It's like you get to a certain place, you get to the place, and there's that turning. The jade thread and the golden needle. It's like you've entered your sanctuary, and then you return. Then an opportunity arises to turn around, enter the world, and respond to conditions. All the dusts are entirely yours. Just totally enter the world. All the dharmas are not someone else's. Follow the current and paddle along, naturally unobstructed. So, you say, get to the essence, and then return to the world, so that you know who you are. But when you are you, Zen is Zen, as Roshi used to say. Thank you very much. I don't know how we're going to proceed, but
will there be readings out for next time?
Yeah, there'll be readings out for next time.